All right, everybody have a pen. We got several blanks to fill out. Yeah, we found like 400 pens yesterday. I found an old tote in my shop from one of the tents, from our fireworks tent. I don't remember what it was.
2 years ago.
Or maybe it was a burn ditch. But anyway, and they still work fine, so we brought them in. Sherry was trying to steal them, but I caught her.
Oh, Sherry found them.
Yeah, Sherry found them. All right, so Ecclesiastes. Okay, well, let me back up a shade. As you know, we're going through the Bible. We started in Genesis every week and a different book, the next book. Now we're in the section of the Old Testament called the Wisdom Books. You know, we started out with the Pentateuch, the first five books of Moses. Then we went through the history of Israel. Now we're in the Wisdom Books. And there's five of them. And I just noticed when I was sitting there that I left one out.
Yeah.
Psalms. Yeah. It's like, duh.
Hey, that resembles my heart.
Yeah, so Psalm, you can't read that. But anyway, so we're in the wisdom books now, and we are in the book of Ecclesiastes. So, on the handout, as I put, it is the book of frustration. And that's kind of a different name for a book. You know, every week a book represents something. Wow, that's a cool, that's loud. The book of Ecclesiastes is tailor-made and tailor-written for 21st century America, like no other book. I don't know, Dale's there. Okay, he's good. All right, so Ecclesiastes is a book written for America, for this time. And even this week, it's the book of frustration. People in America are frustrated. I mean, I looked up the definition of frustration. Frustration is an emotional response to not being able to meet your needs. And that's where we are in America. It causes people to be angry, unsatisfied, and depressed, and sometimes violent. We're a frustrated country. And this week we had those two high-profile suicides. We have everything. You know, I talk to Lauren all the time, and it's just I constantly see the difference between third world India and the United States. We have everything, yet we're so frustrated, we're killing ourselves, and it's just so tragic, you know, when we see another suicide of someone that has everything. And the book of Ecclesiastes just hits that on the head with the two before, because it really addresses that issue of why we're frustrated and how to become unfrustrated.
Give up everything.
Yeah. So that's why I called it the book of frustration. It was written in 975 BC. You guys remember our little timeline of Solomon that we've talked about a few times. Ecclesiastes was written when Solomon was an old guy, looking back on his life, and that's what this book is. He's telling us about his mistakes that he's made. It's his testimony. All right, so Ecclesiastes, the word. I mean, it's kind of a spooky word. We don't use that word, Ecclesiastes. What's it mean? You know, it's a Greek word. It comes from a Greek word that just means it's a teacher or a preacher who is addressing an assembly of people. That's all it is.
You.
Who?
You.
I can be one right now. I'm ecclesiastic. Steve was a second ago. Brian will be. It's not a mysterious religious word. It's just a Greek word for someone that teaches. So kind of demythify that. The 50,000-foot summary of Ecclesiastes. It just teaches us that life on planet Earth is meaningless, empty, and unsatisfying if we don't have a relationship with God. Now, you guys remember, I think it was last couple weeks ago, we did Proverbs and we did Psalms. But in Proverbs, I really tried to make the point that it's about life on Earth. Proverbs is about how we deal with other people. And that's a lot the way Ecclesiastes is. It's a book about living on earth and how frustrating it can be, and we all know how frustrating it can be. When I was putting this together, I actually remembered, has anyone seen the movie City Slickers with Billy Crystal? And I remember, what? It's a good movie because basically it's about a middle-aged guy that's depressed and he's down and he's lost his meaning in life and he doesn't know what life's all about. And so his wife sends him off to this dude ranch to find meaning in life. And of course, Hollywood doesn't get it right, but that's kind of where we are in America. We're all looking for that one thing, that the meaning of life. And that's what Solomon is going to give us this morning, is what that is. Cool. So, yes, it's very good. So, let's talk about Solomon for a second. It's kind of a review, but I made some slightly different points. He was the third king of Israel. Does anyone remember who the first king was?
Saul.
It was Saul. Saul, then David. David had Solomon. Solomon was about 60 years old when he wrote the book. And he died shortly after. God had granted Solomon more wisdom than any other man. We remember that from back in 1 Kings when Solomon took the throne. He asked God, give me wisdom to rule your people. And he did. Solomon was very wise and he wrote the Proverbs. But he wasn't wise enough to rule himself. I mean, he ruled the nation very well, but anyway. So, Solomon spoke 3,000 Ecclesiastes, okay, and 1,005 songs. No, that is a typo. I was reading that yesterday, and I like, what? Because I pride myself on my handouts that I don't have typos, because I have an editor that reads it.
Oh,
so I'm going to blame Sherry.
3,000 what, man?
He wrote 3,000 Proverbs.
Oh, there you go.
Yes. And the book of Proverbs has like 800 or 900 of them, and there are quite a few Proverbs also in Ecclesiastes.
Yeah.
So.
That's true.
Yeah.
Are you going to update that before you email it to me?
Yeah, that's a good point, because I give these to Lauren, and she'll say, what? So, all right. Now, one thing about Solomon that we haven't really mentioned, remember back in Deuteronomy when Moses gave the laws for the kings to follow, once they become king, they were to not gather unto themselves these three things. So do you remember the three things that kings were not supposed to collect? First candy bar question.
One is wealth.
One is wealth. Does anyone remember other things that they weren't supposed to collect for themselves?
Women.
Wealth, women.
Horses.
All right, Steve, you got a piano.
All right.
Yes, the kings were not to collect. They weren't supposed to get rich off the people. They weren't supposed to have a lot of horses, because that means they're trusting in their armies and not God. And they weren't supposed to have all these women, because we all know how women can... Anyway, next point.
Dog will never be back.
One's all right, multiple ones.
Yeah, no.
We all know how women
are. All right, so moving on. Solomon wrote three books of the Bible. We've talked about this many times. Everybody in the class should know this. What three books did Solomon write?
Ecclesiastes.
Well, I think Mamita had it. Yeah, Song of Solomon, yeah, she got it. There you go, one for Amy. He wrote three books. He wrote these three here. And as I said, they're kind of out of order. He wrote Song of Solomon first when he's a young man, a young romantic. Then he wrote Proverbs as a middle-aged guy. Ecclesiastes as an old man looking back on his life. So that's how that works. All right, he had 700 wives. 300 concubines. We'll leave that one. He was a man of peace. And this is kind of a key thing for the book. All through the history of Israel, all those kings, I don't have my sheet, but all the kings of Israel, there's 20 or 30 of them, they were all fighting during their whole reign. They were busy conquering enemies. You know, David was always out fighting people. Well, Solomon comes along. His name means man of peace. And during Solomon's reign, there were no wars, and Solomon had idle time. And we all know how idle time is the devil's workshop. So by him not needing to spend his resources on war effort, he was able to goof around and get into other stuff. So that's kind of a key with him. All right, candy bar bonus question. How long was Solomon's reign?
Dawn.
40 years, yes. He is one of the 40.
20 to 60, huh?
20 to 60, 85%. But he did his 40. His dad was also 40. Several of them were 40, so he was a good king. The key verse in Ecclesiastes is really at the end, and this is my life verse. You know, I write a lot of the guys in jail, and I always sign my name, Ecclesiastes 12:13. And I was telling Sherry the other day, I remember the day I read that verse and it hit me between the eyes. You guys have probably, there's probably been a time when you read a verse that you may have read a dozen times, but now when you read it, it's like, wow, that's a big one. It was back in like August of 96. I was in my basement. I had a home office at the time, and I was reading through Ecclesiastes. And that verse just hit me like a ton of bricks. And I wrote it on a note card, and I carried it on my desk. And it's led us here to the conclusion of the whole matter. After it's all said and done, fear God, keep his commandments. It's the whole duty of man. I mean, that's it. I think that is so cool. So that's our key verse. We'll talk about that in a little bit. Solomon basically gives us that at the end when he's summing everything up. Christ in Ecclesiastes. You know, every book, you can see Christ in it. In the middle of Ecclesiastes, Solomon tells us a little story about a little city. And there's a wise man living there that through wisdom he delivers the people from this onslaught of a great king. So that's a really good little parable about Christ, kind of a foreshadowing of what Jesus did. Because Jesus was made poor for us. He was a poor wise man that saved us from the evil king.
He didn't write four books?
Solomon?
Yeah.
Could have, but we only have three. God chose, because we don't have 3,000 Proverbs. And we also don't have 1,005 Psalms. God chose Solomon's writings and gave us three.
Or 3,000 Ecclesiastes.
Or 3,000. Just like Jesus. You know, the Bible says in John, I think, that the world couldn't contain everything Jesus did, so God chose to give us what he did.
So, was it Song of Solomon or Psalms that he wrote?
Well, good question. Song of Solomon is one of Solomon's songs, like the greatest hits. It made it. Psalms was written by a collection of people.
Okay, that's why. But he's in there also. He wrote some.
Yeah, he wrote some. David wrote most. Asaph, yeah.
That's why I was a little confused.
Yeah, yeah. Psalms was a group effort. A lot of people wrote that. So, that's Christ in Ecclesiastes. He also is you can also see Christ in all the wisdom that Solomon's given out. But that little parable about the little city is probably the best. All right, so again, going to point G. Actually, before we do this, can someone read for me? Let's crack the book open. Let's look at this thing. Did anybody get a chance to read it this last couple weeks? I know Suzanne usually tries to, but you know, I mentioned a few weeks ago, when you start reading Ecclesiastes, the first thing that strikes you is, why is this in my Bible? This is a depressing book. So, can someone read chapter 1, the beginning, verses 1 through 3?
I will. These are the words of the questor, David's son and king of Jerusalem. Smoke, nothing but smoke. That's what the question. Wait a second. Yeah.
What are you reading?
I was going to say, I don't know where you're at.
I was comparing the other day, and I'm still in the wrong.
No, that's all right.
Translation.
Ecclesiastes 1 through 3.
Ecclesiastes 1 through 3. Sorry. Dawn, you got it?
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, Dawn has it. She's got the right open there.
To the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, saith the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What profit hath a man of all his labor which he taketh under the sun?
Yeah, that's depressing. Life is worthless. It's just a bathroom cabinet. It's a vanity. You know, and you know, and then in verse 3 says, what good is any of this? If you kind of thumb over to chapter 2, verse 17.
You see how different that translation was?
Well, I'm kind of glad you read that because it's going to make a point I have in a second. Yeah, look over at chapter 2, verse 17.
Well, usually it's King James, but I was reading a message.
The message. Yeah. Chapter 2, verse 17, Solomon continues his thoughts on life, and he says, I hated life, because the work that is wrought under the sun is grievous. It's tough. It's nothing, and it troubles my spirit, and it's just bleh. So it's like, wow, this is a sad book. So it's a book of frustration. Now, that's why I put these words, these common phrases. This kind of sets the mood of the book. And the first one is under the sun. That's a term we see all through Ecclesiastes, under the sun. You know, and that's life on planet Earth, just like Proverbs was. Ecclesiastes is about life on Earth under the sun. And whenever I'm reading my Bible, I got in the habit of just, when I see the phrase under the sun, I just think in my head, on Earth, because then it just makes more sense to me. So, men is mentioned a lot. It's mentioned 80 times. It's a book about people, book about labor. It's a book about wisdom. The wisdom that's talked about in Ecclesiastes is man's wisdom, not really God's wisdom like in Proverbs. A lot of evil talked about in this book. Now, vanity, the word vanity, we use it a little different now than the 1611 translators used it back then. The Hebrew word that is used when he says vanity of vanities is a word called hebel, which means smoke, like Kevin read. So Solomon is saying that life on earth is like smoke. It's formless. You can't grab it. It just drifts away with the sun. You can't do anything with it. That's kind of what he's meaning when he says it's vanity. It's just like a puff of smoke. So, all right, and then vexation, that's just to be troubled. Vexation of spirit, that word shows up 10 times. So, now that's kind of the background of Ecclesiastes. It's kind of what it's about. And I actually was able to locate a guest speaker that's going to give you a little more information about the book. So I'm going to go out and grab him, and I think Steve is going to entertain you guys for a second here.
Yeah, well, Jim goes to get our guest speaker. Wanted to share, I got to witness to a Muslim lady this week, and I actually walked in on a conversation. This young lady had what she says was an out-of-body experience where she was very fearful of her life, and she talked to her mother, and her mother has had some dreams also recently, her mother said, you need to get closer to God. And so it was really a divine appointment. This girl was open. She's fearful of her life. And basically, I walked up. She was talking to two of the other maintenance guys. And the guy says, hey, Steve will answer. He said, where does your soul go when you die? Wow. I just walked up, and they said, where does your soul go when you die? And so I was able to say, it either goes to heaven or to hell, heaven or hell. Able to share with her that Jesus says he is the way, the truth, and the life, and no man cometh unto the Father but by me, Jesus says. And it was just really a good open door, and I texted her yesterday, and she's not offended, and she's just a young engineer in our company. And so the neat thing is, I also talked to a guy last night, so that happened Friday, and then yesterday we met with an old friend of mine, a believer, He said in last fall he had a grand seizure, grand mal seizure, and but he felt like he had an out-of-body experience. He said, "Steve, he said it was just such a great peace. I'm not worried about finances for my wife." He said, "I'm just totally at peace going home to be with the Lord." And so it's just really quite a contrast from this young lady's experience, that she's petrified and fearful of her life and fearful of dying. Is our guest here? Okay, so that was my time recently. Hey, this is King Solomon. Let's give him a hand, everybody. Welcome. Your honor.
Thank you.
Let me mic you up here, sir.
Yes, thank you very much. Thanks for coming out today. I'm going to tell you a little more about the book I wrote, Ecclesiastes. This is a testimony of my life. It is a book about second chances. It is a book about being with the Lord, falling away from the Lord, and coming back. So, my name's King Solomon. I was king over Israel in Jerusalem. I had good parents. I had very good parents. My father took me to the temple every week. He taught me the law. He taught me how to serve God, serve people. He taught me the Psalms we would sing together. He was a very good dad. My mother was Bathsheba. You guys have heard of her, the virtuous woman. So I had very good parents. When I became king at 19, God gave me wisdom to rule my people, and I did. And I took Israel to the climax of their existence. We had more land. We had wealth and power over all the nations. My dad was a man of war, but I was a man of peace. And that gave me a lot of free time. Life was good for me. And I wrote Proverbs that you guys have read and love. Well, after I wrote the book of Proverbs, something changed in me. I began looking around thinking, there's a lot of things I haven't done in my life. You know, I'm kind of tired of spending my weekends at soccer games and going to the tabernacle all the time. And I'm in my 30s and my body's changing. I'm losing my hair. I'm not as strong as I used to be. So I had what you call a midlife crisis. And I decided that I'm done with the God thing. And I turned my back on my country and my God. And I spent the next 20 years of my life searching for meaning in life outside of God. That's what this book is. And I recorded that journey of my search in the book of Ecclesiastes. In the first chapter, in verse 13 actually, is when I say that I've had enough of this, and I'm going to seek out and find God through some other way. Now, what did I do? If you look at your handout, I went after the five W's of life that people get mixed up in. Wine, women, wisdom, wealth, and works. And these are the same five things that we get mixed up in today. And I think I'm going to have to leave Solomon because I'm getting too hot. So, anyway, we thought that'd be funny just to kind of drive home the point that it's just Ecclesiastes. You know, on Friday nights at Life Issues, we have testimony nights once a month. And this book of Ecclesiastes is just simply Solomon's testimony. And like I said, in the handout, I've got the five W's that he went through. And in chapters 2 through 8, he details his experiments with liquor and women, sensual pleasures. That's when he collects all these women that he has. You know, when he starts out at the beginning of Ecclesiastes, he's probably just got a wife or two. But yeah, that's when all the women come in. So, all right, so he played with wine, women. Where's your handout, Ted? I want to make sure I follow the same as you guys.
Follow me,
John? Yeah, he got too hot. He had to leave. Yeah. Yeah, so, and you know, like I said, since Solomon wasn't at war, he fully went into these different lifestyles of the drinking and the party life. Because, and it's the same things we do, because, you know, everything in this country tells us that those are the things that make us happy. And so Solomon wanted to try it out for himself. Now, I had a bunch of stuff on wisdom and works, but the thing with this is, and this is what Solomon finally came down to, is that I think it's chapter 7, verse 13. After Solomon did all of that, he realized that we all have a God-sized hole in our heart, and that we try to put the W-size things in it, and it doesn't work, and that's kind of what leads to the frustration. And as he experimented with these five things, I put that table on here of the human pursuits. This is more the detail of the things that Solomon did and experienced that he tried to replace God with that didn't work. The first one being human wisdom. In chapter 2, he starts out talking about how, you know, he collected philosophical people. He collected all these smart people from Babylon, Chaldea, Egypt, to teach him wisdom, all the isms of life, humanism, fatalism, materialism. There's a bunch of isms in Ecclesiastes. And when it's all said and done, the wise man and the fool, they both die and they go to the same place. That's kind of what Solomon come to. Same with human labor. It doesn't matter if you're a workaholic or if you're a loafer. Solomon just realized we all die and we all go to the same place. What's the point? Hates life. It's frustrating. That was in chapter 2. Then he goes on to human purpose toward the end of chapter 2. We all think we're going to do this, we're going to do that. God has other plans for us. Sometimes, you know, Solomon basically said, you're healthy today, do it today. The competition, you know, I put success brings more envy than joy. Human greed, the eye's never satisfied. Remember that verse back in Proverbs that says, like, hell is never satisfied, neither full. Is never full, neither is a human eye. Yeah. Yeah, likening the two together. Yeah. And then fame. You know, it's brief, it's uncertain. Solomon goes through a little spiel talking about how generations before us, they just come and go. And that got me thinking, like even the U.S. presidents, I don't know who they were. And even my great-grandparents, I don't really know their names. I don't know much about them. So what Solomon's saying is really true, that the things that we think are important today and we want to be famous, we want people to know us, you know, a few generations from now, nobody's going to know. So chasing after that is futile. And I think that might, you know, it just struck me this week with these suicides. It's so tragic that people have tried all these things and they didn't deliver. All these things promised to deliver. Hey, how's it going? Come on in. We got a hand up there on the corner. We're on, I don't know what page we're on.
Three.
Page 3? Okay, yeah, mine's number different. All right, so then the next thing we try to fill the God hole with is desire, money, riches. Solomon did all that, didn't work. Coveting, wanting stuff. Actually, in Proverbs, he says that coveting, envy, will rot you from the inside, in Proverbs 14:30. Now, the merriment, I thought this was cool. Solomon spends some time in chapter 7 and also chapter 2 talking about the party life and the merriment life. And I've always been a jokester, even in high school, and I love doing stuff. And you think of people like Robin Williams, Killed Himself, or Chris Farley, and some of these guys that are just brilliant, funny comics that they're obviously hurting on the inside. And, you know, we're all like that. I mean, we're all of these things at some point in our life. But one time I heard a story Chuck Swindoll told. I love Chuck. He's one of my favorites. There was this guy that was really depressed, just down. He just couldn't function very well. So he decided to go to the doctor to see if the doctor could help. And the doctor said, you know, there's a circus in town that I hear that there's a clown there that is just so funny that he'll just have you in stitches and you'll really enjoy it and that'll lift your spirits. And the guy looks at the doctor and says, well, doc, I'm that clown. And I thought, wow, that is the way we are sometimes. So Solomon tried to go that route with the merriment lifestyle and being the happy-go-lucky guy, and didn't work. So, all right. So the last thing, 10. Now these 10 vanities in Ecclesiastes, Solomon gives a little summary of the vanity, and then in the verse I have listed, like 8:10, that's where he says it's vanity. That's what that verse means. That's what the verse reference is. That's where Solomon declares that pursuit as vanity. So, after Solomon goes through all those chapters, 7 through 8, or 2 through 8, he finally...
That pursuit is smoke in the wind.
Is smoke in the wind, like Kansas would say. Because I used to play that song.
Dust in the wind.
Dust in the wind, yeah. All right. Here's kind of what Solomon comes to. If you can get to if you can make it through Ecclesiastes without being depressed, because it is depressing. And I feel so, man, you know, this is off subject, but I'm sure you guys are the same as me. Your heart just grieves for people out in the world that don't have the Lord, that all this stuff going on, all this puppet show of our civilization is meaningless. And it would be depressing and frustrating to be a part of it, to go to work every day, sit in traffic, do all that we do for nothing. So that's why people are taking themselves out of it. But if you can make it through that and get up to chapter 9 through 12, Solomon kind of wraps it up and says, here's the deal. When God made man in the beginning, back in Genesis, man had a purpose, all right? When God made man, his purpose was to fellowship with God. You know, him and God and Adam walked in the garden daily. They were a fellowship with God and love God and worship God. And then they were to have families, Adam and Eve, you know, reproduce. They were to love their families. And then they were to work in the garden. They were to tend the garden. And then they had a dominion over nature. That was the original plan. Well, then Genesis chapter 3, the sneaky snake comes in and man sins, man falls. Okay. And that breaks the relationship with God. When that relationship broke, our family unit is now strained. We don't get along. We have trouble with each other. It's frustrating. Work is no longer fun. It's frustrating. It's hard. It's by the sweat of our brow things get done, and it means nothing. Nature, of course, you know, the earth is also groaning, as everything else, all these volcanoes, earthquakes, everything going on. It's against us. So all these things are against us. So what Solomon has come to realize is by restoring one thing, the relationship with God, that will fix the families, that'll give your work meaning and purpose, and then you can enjoy creation for what it is. So just by that one thing, that's the one thing that Hollywood got wrong in City Slickers, because they had it, I think it was like everybody's one thing is different or something silly, but it's been a while since I've seen it. But that's what Solomon comes to realize is it is frustrating, it is broken, it is depressing if you don't have a relationship with God. So toward the end of his life, Solomon gets back right with God. And in chapter 11 is one of my favorite chapters in this book. This is where Solomon finally says, after everything he's done, he finally gives us these seven things on how to live your life and find happiness in life amongst all this craziness. Now, in my Bible, in chapter 11, I've got a big thing I wrote, Live Like You Were Dying chapter. And I should have put that in the handout. You guys remember that Tim McGraw song, Live Like You Were Dying? I'm not a country music fan, but the spirit of that song is kind of what Solomon is saying, is that live like you're dying. And let's just go through it, because I don't want to compare it too much to that country stuff. But can somebody read 11? 1 through 1 and 2. Zach, your hand up. I see a hand. Yeah, if you can leave. And again, this is the chapter when, after 10 chapters of depressing stuff, Solomon's finally coming around and saying, all right, here's what you do. Here's what. Ecclesiastes chapter 11, verses 1 and 2.
Cast thy bread upon the water, so thou shalt find it after many days. Give a portion to seven, and also to eight, for thou knowest not what evil shall be upon the earth.
Yeah, thanks. So, Solomon says, okay, cast your bread on the water. You know, some of these are kind of cryptic, so we're going to kind of talk about them. He's saying, don't hoard your stuff. Your stuff's not yours. You know, if I gave Kevin a 20 right now, and Kevin goes out in the hallway, and someone hits him up for some gas money or whatever, and Kevin says, well, he just gave me a 20, here's a 20. That 20 was really never Kevin's, and so he can freely give it to someone else, knowing that it was freely given to him. That's the way we should look at our stuff. God just gives us what we have. It doesn't hurt us to give it away. So casting your bread upon the water, don't hoard your stuff, give it out. And don't just give it to one person or one thing, give it to seven, give it to eight, give it to lots of people. Do good and seek to make other people good too. I mean, just share your life with other people, not just money, just share your life. That's what he's saying in those first few verses. All right, can someone read verse 3? We got a lot of verses, so if anyone wants to help read.
If the clouds be full of rain, they empty themselves upon the earth, and if the tree fall toward the south or toward the north, in the place where the tree falleth, there it shall be.
Yes. So you should. This is telling. Solomon is telling us now. Okay, share your stuff, and be a blessing where you are. It's a thing of nature to empty itself when it's full, on a river, lake, clouds, whatever. When it's full, it empties itself. When a cloud is full, it empties itself. It gives the blessings of rain to where it's at. You know, if a cloud over Harrisonville, ain't going to rain in Olathe. So we are here in Harrisonville. So he's telling me here that be a blessing where I'm at. Wherever I fall, that's where I am. Be a blessing. Live where you land is what I called it. All right, verse 4. Someone want to read that? Dawn, go for it.
Yep. He that observeth the wind shall not sow, and he that regardeth the clouds shall not reap.
All right, so Solomon's telling us here, just like farmers, you know, I'm sure Steve could relate. I mean, a farmer isn't going to wait till the perfect weather condition to plant. They've got to plant when they need to plant. They don't delay in planting. Solomon's telling me, telling us, don't wait to be happy. Don't wait till you have a better job, till you have a spouse, till you have a boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever. Be happy now. Don't look at the circumstances in your life and don't let those things dictate whether or not you're happy. Be happy. That's what he's telling us. Be happy now. All right, so verse 5. Anyone want to read that? All right, Rachel, thanks.
As thou knowest not what is the way of the spirit, nor how the bones do grow in the womb of her that is a child, even so thou knowest not the works of God who maketh all.
Yes, thanks. And this is one of my favorites. God's basically saying, hey, you're not me. You don't know what I'm doing. You don't know how I do it. Just trust me. Live submissively to God. So that's really what he's telling us there. So verse 6. Anyone got that? I can read it. In the morning, sow thy seed, and in the evening, withhold not thy hand. For thou knowest not whether shall prosper either this or that, or whether they shall both be alike good. So I got a note here, die with your boots on. That's what I put in my Bible next to that verse. You know, sow in the morning, sow in the evening, sow in the summertime. There's some kind of song about that. But it's basically saying don't be weary in well-doing. Be faithful to the work of God and don't stop serving him. Don't stop sowing is what this verse is saying. Keep at it. Yes, Dale?
Yeah, I like when you read chapter 11, verse 1 to 2.
Yep.
My mind automatically went back to Nehemiah 8:10. If I could read that.
Yeah, you bet.
It says, then he said unto them, go your way, eat the fat and drink the sweet, and send portions to them for whom that is prepared. But this day is holy unto our Lord. Neither be sorry, for the joy of the Lord is your strength. Why God is ministering the word of God to people, that's where you get the joy of the Lord. And the joy of the Lord is our strength.
Yes, that's very true. And I can attest to that. I mean, I mentioned a few weeks ago, I just so appreciate, you know, you guys letting me get up here every Sunday and teach, because it is a blast. I get true joy out of just sharing things that someone else has taught me. I mean, I didn't come up with this stuff. Someone shared it with me, and I'm sharing it with you. I'm casting my bread. So, yeah. All right, that takes us down to the sixth thing. Verse 7, truly the light is sweet. And a pleasant thing it is for the eyes to behold the sun. Live joyfully. And what a difference this verse is to back in chapter 2 when Solomon said, 2:17, he said, I hate life. Actually, he says that like three times in Ecclesiastes. Solomon is like on the brink of suicide, maybe, I don't know. But he gets pretty down. And how different now he's saying light is sweet. Life is sweet. It's a gift from God. You know, the creation's joyful. Everything about life is just awesome. I mean, you know, like it says in Job, man will give his anything, skin or something for, he'll give anything for his own soul or skin or something. But anyway, so that's another thing Solomon's telling us there is life is sweet, enjoy it, and behold the sun. All right, so number 7. Solomon's telling us to live carefully. Verses 8 and 9. And this is a good warning. If a man lives many years and rejoice in them all, let him remember the days of darkness, so they shall be many. Getting old. All that cometh is vanity. Rejoice, O young man, in thy youth. Let thy heart cheer thee in the days of thy youth. Walk in the ways of thy heart and in the sight of thine eyes, but know thou that for all these things God will bring thee into judgment. So he's basically saying, go out, cast your bread, live joyfully, live submissively, love life to the fullest. You know, if life's an apple, bite a big bite out of it and let the juice run down your chin. Love life, but within boundaries. Because you know everything we do, someday we'll be judged, whether it be good or bad. I think it's 2 Corinthians, where it talks about the judgment seat of Christ. So that's basically what he's saying there, is do it, live life but within boundaries. So, all right, now those are the seven things he teaches us, and then he kind of gets down to the climax in chapter 12, and we already read 13, that Solomon says, let us hear the conclusion of the matter, fear God and keep his commandments. Now, one other thing I wanted to kind of point out, after Solomon tells us how to live in chapter 11, look at chapter 12. And I don't know if you guys have ever seen this. In chapter 12, Solomon takes some time to describe the process of aging. I don't know if you guys have seen this before, but he basically tells us, now here's what's going to happen. You're going to be young, you're going to be strong, have fun, enjoy life. The dark days are coming. And he kind of describes those dark days, and I'm kind of getting into the, they're not dark yet, but they're getting a little cloudy. Yeah. They get a little twilight there. But look at verse 3, chapter 12, verse 3. And it's a neat little passage here where Solomon talks about how we get old. He says, in the day when the keepers of the house shall tremble. All right, so here's your nervous system. You know, the older folks will kind of do that. So your nervous system starts going out. The strong man shall bow themselves. You know, your legs, they're usually likened to the strength of a man. Your legs getting a little shaky. And the grinders cease because they are few. You know, it's your chompers. You're losing your grinders. And those that look out their windows, you know, or glasses. Pretty much most older folks have glasses because their eyes start getting bad. The doors shall be shut in the street. The doors are your ears. You can't hear anymore hardly. And it just goes through and talks about how birds will wake you up in the morning. The old folks get up I've been getting up at 4 for a while. And I just, the earlier I get up, the more I love it. One day I got up at like 3:15. I think it was on Tuesday. And I'm just getting to where I just love waking up in the morning. I don't even set my alarm anymore. And what a difference, man. When I was a teenager, I'd sleep till noon. And I always wanted a job where I could work second shift or something. But I love the morning now. So, but okay. Then verse 6: the spinal cord, the silver cord, be loosed, and the golden bowl be broken. That's your spinal cord in our head, our pitcher is the heart. Will be broken at the fountain, or the wheel broken at the cistern. That is the pump. There's the heart. That's finally your circulatory system gives out. And then in verse 7, 12:7. Then shall the dust return to the earth as it was, and the spirit shall return to God who gave it. So you're dead. That's it. Game over. But, now here's what's cool. Here's what I like about this. And I was talking to Sherry a little bit about it the other day. Isn't it cool how God gives us, we don't just drop dead at 70. You know, there was a movie, Logan's Run, where everybody died at 30. But God gives us ample warning that we're getting close to the end, and he gives us the roadmap that we're going on. So it's just so important to me when I see this, how we just got to get in, we got to serve the Lord, we got to do those seven things, we got to live generously, live joyfully, love life. These dark days are coming for all of us if the Lord doesn't come first. And it's cool how he gave us a little warning on what's going to happen to our bodies. So, and then Solomon wraps up. So, in a nutshell, Solomon, mid-30s, writes Proverbs, has a midlife crisis. He gets away from the Lord for 20 or so years and gets into all kinds of hedonism and evilness. And toward the end of his life, he writes these two beautiful chapters that talk about how to get back with the Lord, serve the Lord, that's the most important thing in life, and do it before you get old. This is how you get old. So, and then he closes the book out. He passes, they say he died not too long after this was written. So, that's Ecclesiastes. Now, any questions on that? I want to talk about Song of Solomon.
How old do you think he would have been?
He was around 60, and actually Solomon died young, and I was reading some Jewish, I love reading Jewish, like the Midrash and some other things. most of these kings, most of the people back in this time period lived in their, 70s and 80s, no problem. Solomon died pretty young, and there's all these theories that his body is racked with, different STDs. I mean, he lived a rough life for most of his adult life. And that rough party life is hard on you. So Solomon did die relatively young. But all right, now, next week, we're going to shift gears big time. We're going to shift buses even.
To a love story.
And if you guys get a chance to read Song of Solomon this week, I really encourage it. It's a pretty small book, 8 chapters, I believe. It only takes like 30 minutes to read. It's a good read. I think everyone here has probably written love notes back in high school and stuff. I mean, you never wanted the teacher to find your love note and read it in front of the class, right? Well, that's what happens to Solomon. He writes this little love note, and it's passing between tables, and now here it is for us to read. And it's pretty juicy. Actually, it's funny because in these Jewish texts that I read, Jewish men were not allowed to read Song of Solomon until they were 30.
Really?
Because it's kind of his adult theme. Yeah, a little sensuous. Extremely colorful in their descriptions of love and the body. It's a beautiful book. And it's also a book that as you're reading it, like Ecclesiastes, you think, what is this doing in my Bible? But there are some really cool things. So far I've pulled like 20 lessons for our marriage that you can get directly from the Song of Solomon. So it's a good book. So, and it's not preached on a lot. I've not heard a lot of teaching. I've read a lot of books on it. But so hopefully we'll have fun with that next week. So if you get a chance to read Song of Solomon, that would be cool. You'll be one up on everyone else. And that is pretty much it. Is there any questions? We're a few minutes early.
You talked about this book last time.
Pilgrim's Progress?
Yeah.
Man, I love that book.
I just looked over and saw it.
Yeah, I didn't finish my thought real quick, but the cool thing, that book is, it's what's called an allegory. It's a story. What happened was John Bedford was a preacher that got put in jail for preaching.
Bunyan.
He was in Bedford, England. John Bunyan was preaching, and he got put in jail. Well, that didn't stop John. He writes the Pilgrim's Progress, which is the gospel, but he wrote it in a story format that kind of got under the radar of the officials, and it became a very popular book. And what the book is about is our journey through life and all the people that we meet that were in Proverbs we talked about. The mocker, the slacker, the loafer, the angry man. All these people are in that book. And Bunyan tells about how to deal with them and continue on your path to the crown, to serving the Lord. So I love that book.
It has all these little side notes too,
It's kind of a tough read.
It has like little itty bitty print.
The who? Little tiny print?
Little itty bitty print.
Oh, yeah, I always hate those.
I mean, it has like the normal story, but then off to the side in a little space, it has a little print.
I haven't seen that one.
Can you see it on YouTube? Is it where people could look up?
Oh, it is odd. Must be some notes, maybe editor notes or something. Yeah, you can. You can see it on YouTube. But anyway. Yeah, you're right, Sherry. That's right. That's all I got. So,
Kevin, you can check that out. There's a little card in the back. But Doris is at the. You need to probably see Doris and just check it out if you want to read it.
Yeah,
I also just now Googled it, and it is linking up as the entire book.
Really?
Yeah.
So you can Google.
Oh yeah, it's a very good.
Some progress.
Yeah.
Read it online.
Oh, they got two of them there.
Yeah, it's a good book.
Green one and a red one.
Well, we'll get out a little bit early. Those of you that haven't met Dawn, make sure you meet Dawn today. My friend Phil Kramer came in a little late. You have to do 20 push-ups for being late.
Plus two.
Well, you can wait till later. One thing I try to do every morning is, of course, get up and read my Bible as well. And I'm now in the New Testament, so I'm glad I've just finished the Old Testament. But I'm going out of town for 4 or 5 days here. I'm going to visit my dad. He's in North Missouri. So I'm trying to finish writing to some inmates. I've got 3 letters that I'm trying to finish up today so I can mail before I go out of town. And the way Jim described Ecclesiastes was so fitting to... I've read his letter like 3 times now. We're going through the journey home with this inmate. And just his description of how the drugs blinded him to the reality of life, and he was trying to mask the pain with drug use, and he became very angry because he was frustrated, and he's a fighter, and he was in a gang, and I mean, he's in Cass County, but he's in maximum security. That's where the violent offenders or the sex offenders are, but he's in the violent offenders group, and in fact, he's actually gotten in a fight in there. But I don't even know how he got my name. I don't know the guy, but I did visit him once, and the blinders are coming off, and he's realizing this conclusion to fear God and keep His commandments. And he was trying to find love because he was lonely and all those things, and he's now found that inner. I said he recently got in a fight. He got 7 ribs broke. He got 4 staples in his head. He got a tooth knocked out. Wow. So it was it nearly killed him. He had to go to the hospital and everything. But he said he's healing up. Even that was a blessing. He said he was mostly defending himself from a couple of guys. And these are real life things, aren't they? The sting of Ecclesiastes, the brokenness of this fallen world. And I so much loved the way Jim described realizing that restoring a right relationship with God helps put families back together. It does give you a right relationship with the earth. It gives purpose in our jobs. And that was just a beautiful description. And let's look up the verse that he mentioned. Was it the small city?
Oh, in 9.
That was very profound.
That's a cool little thing.
Ecclesiastes 9.
9:14, I believe.
Because sometimes when I read these things, I'm like, what does that mean? I know there's something more there than what I understand. Ecclesiastes 9.
9:14. Roughly 13 or 14. There's a couple verses.
I never saw that as Jesus Christ. So 9:14.
There was a little city.
13, 14, and 15. I'll just read that when I hear their pages quit turning. Ecclesiastes 9, 13 says, "This wisdom have I seen also under the sun, and it seemed great unto me. There was a little city, and few men within it, and there came a great king against it." And Jim, you described that as being like Satan.
Yeah.
Coming against
the world. Yeah, the little city. Most people, I got that from either Spurgeon or J. Vernon McGee, is that the little city is like the earth. Even though it's big to us, it's little.
Satan is called a king over all the children of pride or something like that. So he is a king in his own sense. And besieged it. In other words, he took it captive and built great bulwarks therein. In other words, he fortified. And verse 15 says, "Now there was found in it a poor, wise man." And Jesus more than once is called wise, mm-hmm. or the wisdom of God. And it says, "For our sakes he became poor.
Yeah.
And he, by his wisdom, delivered the city. In other words, he freed those that are besieged. Yet no man remembered that same poor man. And so we often forget the Lord, don't mm-hmm. we? That was just really profound. So when you said that, I'm like, we need to say more about that.
Mm-hmm.
So let's pray and we'll be dismissed. Lord, I do thank you for your Son, Jesus Christ. Though he was rich, he became poor for our sakes, that we through him might be made rich. And
Father, we thank you for your Son, Jesus Christ. Please forgive us when we forget you. I thank you.